All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thanks for joining us here on your favorite talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. And now we are doing one of our favorite programs, that is Ulwazi. We are joined by two very special individuals in the studio today. We're going to be talking real estate investment trusts. And as always, if you have any questions, any comments, you can call into the studio at 0832888401. That's 0832888401. And gentlemen, how are you doing this morning?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm quite excited to have our first guest on the show. Maybe you can just introduce yourself to our audience.
Thank you guys for hosting me today. My name is Tuafeni Shatona. Mm-hmm. I am a chartered accountant by profession. Maybe just a background on my career experience. I started my articles with Deloitte Namibia. I did 3 years there, and I went to join Deloitte Ireland, where I was doing mergers and acquisitions for about a year and a half. And I got a call from home to come start a bank, ironically. The bank's name I won't mention here, but I was in a project phase of starting a bank, and that went quite well. I learned a lot, and then I got a calling to come and join an industry that I love very much, which is property. Currently, I'm the portfolio manager for the Oryx Unlisted Property Fund, which is a new fund, birthed by Oryx Properties and GIPF to invest in the property industry.
I think that's really a good background there.
Excellent. So the listeners know we are joined by two very knowledgeable individuals.
Yeah, your host Nishila. We are about to kickstart our discussions for today, which is the real estate investment trust. Maybe just to give us a bit of a background in terms of what is the real estate investment trust, just for the listeners to have an understanding what it means.
Yeah. No, it's quite an area that I'm quite passionate about. Just for also clarification, there are no real estate investment trusts in Namibia. Mostly due to the fact that there's no legislation that mirrors other legislations in other jurisdictions. But, a real estate investment trust is by definition a company that collects money from, retail investors and institutional investors and invest into the property industry. But a key distinction in what doesn't exist in Namibia is that there is no legislation that guides how that should be done. And whereas in other jurisdictions like South Africa, there's an actual legislation that guides companies to actually how that is done, and it gives them a lot of tax benefits, which is very critical in this area, because the purpose is that you collect money on behalf of, as a company from the nation, and then you invest directly into property, but you get a tax benefit that exempts you from paying large amounts of tax. So it creates an incentive for investors to invest in the property industry.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Now, one of your recent articles, you then stated that direct property investment requires substantial capital and long holding periods and comes with limited transparency and in pricing. So what is your perspective around that?
Yeah. So picture you as an individual when you buy a property. Number one, you're already bonded. Most times you take a loan and you're already bonded by a bank, let's say 20 years, 30 years, whatever the agreement is. So it's already a long period that you're going to hold that that asset, right? And then you move into the effect that maybe you want to sell it at some point in the along the lines after like 10 years, let's say. So that creates a situation where for you to really create a huge profile over a that period of time, it's very difficult because you are holding one asset for over 10 years. But picture a situation where a company collects $1 billion to invest into the property industry from individuals like yourselves, whether you invested $100, $1,000, $10,000. At the end of the day, that company has power to invest into the property industry for a longer period of time. And I think that's a very missing gap in our market right now, because we should admit to saying that we have a property crisis right now in Namibia. Rental prices are high. Finding residential homes is very tough.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a collective company that drives, or an incentive to a company to drive and build a mass housing project, not the government necessarily, but private investors taking their own money,
mm-hmm.
own money being from institutions, from individuals, and then they collectively and say, we are going to build massive projects into the property industry. So that's the capital requirement that's required. It's the size to say of a billion plus Namibian dollars. But who is incentivizing that scheme?
All right.
Yeah.
No, I think it's quite clear that we really need change. We need the legislation to come through. It's a very critical space. But now when you're looking into the Namibian landscape, what are the current problems? For instance, what is the limited investment vehicles in that space?
Yeah. So you ask, you name at the top of your head, what companies do you know in Namibia that are quite actively involved in the property space? You can name maybe Oryx, you can name maybe Safland and the likes, but they are not even doing necessarily, they are focused on a specific sector in the property industry. But when you take South Africa as an example, there are 100 companies that are doing different kinds of properties because they are incentivized. So when you look, that becomes a challenge for our own industry because there is no real big players, like a number of big players who are incentivized to kind of invest in the industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, based on the current market trends that is happening in Namibia, is our property space liquid? Is it liquid that there's sufficient capital, or is it illiquid?
Yeah.
Where would you place our market?
Yeah. I think when I discuss liquidity in this aspect is the quickness and the easiness for you to get your money out when you invested in an asset. So picture a stock market or a stock that you buy on the stock exchange. You bought it today, tomorrow you want to sell it. You go to a stockbroker, you sell it, and then someone takes it off your hands. So that's how liquid the stock market is. Whereas with the property, you buy a property today. How easy is it for you to sell it tomorrow, for example? It's a very long-term aspect that you look into because you have to find a buyer. You have to find financing. Oh, the buyer needs to find financing. The financier needs to draft an agreement, and that process takes a long time. Title of deed, just for it to move hands, it takes a long time. So the liquidity in that aspect is to say that just the process alone of selling a property can take over a year alone. And that creates a situation where it's very difficult or illiquid for you to exchange hands in the property industry, whereas compared to shares or stock market, you can literally buy today and sell tomorrow. So it's your prerogative. But in the property industry, it really takes a process for that exchange to happen that creates illiquidity in the market.
Okay. No, fair enough. I think it's quite clear. Now, I can see your discussion is very much based on incentives.
Yes.
Now, when we're talking about incentive in this space, what type of incentive? Who must give the incentive?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the incentive is on the company to kind of take the risk to create or build property, right? But the incentive will come if there is a legislation that kind of guides them, right? Remember, a legislation in this regard it's simply a paper that's signed off by the government, right? But that paper can guide and say, as an example with South Africa per se. So South Africa says, if you distribute more than, I think, 80 to 90% of your income every year. So remember, you're investing in a property industry, let's say $1 billion, but you are renting, you are selling property, and you get that income. But at the moment you get that income, 80% of it, if you distribute it to the people who invested in that company, then you can get a tax exemption, right? So that legislation, the moment there is that incentive of the companies can take a risk on their capital and they can distribute a lot of their income from the property industry, then people are incentivized, because me, I'm thinking, if I can get a 4% return on a 32-day account, but the property industry is giving me a 10-11% per se, then I'd rather put my money into a property real estate investment trust that gives me my income every single year, because they are also incentivized by that legislation to distribute their income every single year.
Okay. Yeah. Now, when you look at this legislation, so obviously now we got Ministry of Land, Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries and Land. Mm-hmm. We got the Ministry of Urban that kind of also has a custodian on the townlands. Then we have the Ministry of Finance. Who needs to drive this legislation?
I believe it's a collective agenda that the government has to look at. I know this year they held a public-private forum where investors could engage government, because the effect affects almost all ministries, if I put it like that. Because, one, you look at Ministry of Finance, it's a tax incentive. So they have to drive from a tax legislation and a tax and income perspective for the government coffers. But you also look at Ministry of Lands, because they have a lot to say in how land is distributed, and they have a lot to say in how they see it playing out in the future. So we had a land conference, we had a lot of discussions around how we want to manage our land, but it's a collective government policy to say, who do you want to drive the output of the crisis that is the land crisis right now? Mm-hmm. Do you want government to solve it by mass housing, which the government has tried before, but has not really worked well in their favor? Or do you want private investors to have incentives for them to kind of push mass housing into the nation? And a good example is, let's say, Osona, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine Osona being the incentive for investors, but you could invest in a company that owns Osona as an individual. Mm-hmm. So we will have a lot of Osonas just popping out, because companies are now driven to say they can get capital from people, individuals or institutions even, and they can distribute and create mini townships around Windhoek that serve the people's needs. Right now, there is no that incentive. So the driver should, in my opinion, be that government creates a policy, mm-hmm. which is now the legislation that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and then the institutions take that document and say, actually, this document serves us right. This document is what we can use to build more Osonas, to build more properties, to build more industrial parks. Because we need industrial parks in Walvis Bay. Mm-hmm. But if you take South Africa as an example, they have industrial parks in almost every other town, because there are companies that take risk, which is now risk from individuals, retail investors, institutions, banks, and then they create companies that actually go out there and build property.
Okay. Now, we now really pushing for the real estate investment trust legislation. Mm-hmm. But do you think that the country, do we have the capacity? Because when you look at the investment space and vehicle, everyone is operating in the unlisted space.
Yes.
So now, on the listing space, yes, in Namibia, do we have sufficient capacity in the country?
I truly believe so. I truly believe so, because, okay, let's take it first on the legislation side, right? Do we have the skills to draft their legislation? I believe so, because we, as far as our laws have come to be birthed, they've followed a similar path to South Africa. And South Africa already has such legislation in place. So we don't really have to stretch ourselves. We just have to apply what South Africa has already done and say that how best can we make it fit to our needs, right? So we have already a big brother to kind of look at what they've done already in what way they are good, the good and the bad that have come out of their legislation, so that we can use that for our industry. But at the same time, on the stock exchange aspect, when now let's say we have a legislation, I think the Namibia Stock Exchange has done a good job to grow from where it was to where it's going. There's a lot of new companies, especially in the mining space, that are starting to list, and they are being oversubscribed. So I see the maturity of the Namibian financial industry, and I see that it is going in the right direction. It just needs that policy drive that kind of mirrors, matches our big brother, and then we can get going.
All right. Now, looking at the Real Estate Investment Trust listing, and maybe just for the listeners to have a better perspective, and our GCC bonds.
Yes.
Now, what is the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the GCC bond is for government to raise capital,
mm-hmm.
but can capital be raised on just a specific, say, crisis to address that?
The answer would be it's possible, but you want to look at best practice, for example. The nations that have feathered and have prospered in different industries or different aspects, take a Singapore as an example, right? And many people like to say, this country should be the Singapore of Africa and so forth.
Hmm.
Singapore did not necessarily take government and drive to say government will raise money and build real estate.
Mm.
They create a legislation, they create a policy, they make it business friendly, they create incentives so that private investors can come and build real estate companies in their country. So my opinion is still that I do not want government to focus on what they shouldn't necessarily be focused on.
Okay.
Yeah. So if government raises a bond to build a mass housing, the issue wouldn't necessarily be that the money can be raised, but we'll still have another mass housing crisis.
Yeah.
And we already had a previous mass housing crisis where the intention was good, that government wants to build a lot of houses for the nation, but the output was still not to the level that we wanted to. And we want a sustainable long-term solution, not a short-term 2-3 year solution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's bring it to practical terms.
Yeah.
We're now working on Independence Avenue.
Yes.
And when you're working and you look at the different buildings and in that space,
yeah.
The ownership structure is that, and that's the LIS group, that is the what group. It's more like family ownership, family
yes.
ownership, fifth dom.
Yes.
Now, what the Real Estate Investment Trust, what can it unlock in terms of ownership? What are we looking at?
All right. Let's take Independence Avenue as an example, right? And this can be mirrored into smaller towns, Swakopmund, Walvis Bay, the north and the south, right? But taking Independence as an example, you have a legislation that allows someone to start a company that is listed. They will still go through listing requirements and everything, but they can start a company, and now they can raise capital for them to build actual property. Then they raise 1 billion Namibian dollars on the Namibia Stock Exchange. Now they are sitting on 1 billion. Then they look around the Independence Street and ask themselves, which property right now is underperforming, undervalued, or that needs attention that they can acquire, redevelop. Let's say maybe it's even just a office building that's dilapidated, it's not performing well. For example, I've seen one at where there's the pub ketu, the salons,
yes,
that
yes.
building is going on auction, right? And then let's say that someone raises a billion Namibian dollars and they want to buy that building for, let's say, 50 million or
yeah.
80 million.
Mm-hmm.
They buy the building and they say, now that I have 1 billion Namibian dollars, 500 million, I can build there a high-rise apartment building for, and people can come and rent. Pure rental play.
Mm-hmm.
In a year, them spending that much, they can generate maybe revenue of 10 million,
mm-hmm.
right, a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they distribute the whole amount to their investors. So the practicality is that since that person has raised capital in the current market, they can go out there and go in independence and find property, the refurbish it, because they will have a team. They will have experts. They will have people who know how to manage property, and they refurnish or rebuild or add value, and they create property that actually matches the needs of individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, fair enough. I think it's I can see the value in the real estate investment trust. Now, maybe just for our listeners and for our viewers to just understand, what is democratizing of property investment? What does it mean?
Yeah, I think democratizing is just to say that there is a, how do I put it? There is a misconception about where to start in the property industry, right? Because right now the barriers of entry are quite high. To buy a property, a house in Dintu for less than 2 million, it's almost impossible, right? So already the notion of the Namibian people is that I cannot participate in the property industry because I don't have the capital or the money to buy a $2 million property. At the same time, the foreign nationals seeing the potentials of what the country could look like in the future, they are taking advantage of the situation because to them, 2 million is nothing in their own currency. So we are already outplayed out of the market. But let's say comes a company that has 1 billion into the property industry. So then they can kind of drive and democratize. I mean, now you as Neshila can take 1,000 Namibian dollars and be part of a Namibian company that is raising capital to build to $1 billion. So your 1,000 can be your entry into the property industry. But it creates also a situation because you are now a shareholder in that company, but in the return, you can also be able to rent from that company.
Okay. Yeah. Now, having the real estate real estate investment trust legislation and bringing it down now to local authority level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm of the opinion that one should be able, if you now set R1,000.
Yes.
I'm of the opinion that if I have R1,000 and now in Oshakati or in the Ekuku, I can stand up and go swipe that 1,000 at local authority. They must give me a share certificate of that particular township.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes.
Now, how does this legislation empowers? Will it be able to empower the local authority to run a similar approach for local residents to participate into that space?
I agree with that because, and that is where it comes to us reimagining how we want the legislation to be like to serve our country needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because take Okahanja Town Council. If we draft this legislation, maybe to favor municipalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now municipality can say, I am going to raise capital in our communities from our individuals in the community. And I'll take that legislation and I raise capital in the community, but I still come back and give back the services that are required into the community. I give back the housing needs that are required in the community. So it's serving both purposes because now people can contribute and get a return from their investment just by partnering with, let's say, a local authority. At the same time, they can get the services and the housing needs that they require in their own community. So I see us kind of coming together as a nation and crafting a legislation that works for our own needs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, having such a legislation in place, in terms of market liquidity, how does it support market liquidity in terms of growth or impact?
The market liquidity will come into a play where now you have a situation where a number of investors or companies can come in that want to do that aspect, but they are willing to take a longer term view to buy property. The property process will still be the same. They will still go through title of deed, registration, lawyers, and everything, and that takes quite a while. But on the share trading perspective, where you can buy your share into that real estate investment trust, it can happen over a day. It can happen overnight. So literally your savings, let's say you save $1,000 every month into a real estate investment trust, your own income, and you build it up over a number of years. Now you have raised, you have $100,000 into your real estate investment trust. The day you want to sell it, you just wake up tomorrow and then you sell your $100,000 worth of shares, as an example. But if you have a property right now in Windhoek, for you to get your, let's say it's worth $100,000 compared to now the shares that you had.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It will take you, number one, you have to go advertise it. You have to go find a real estate agent. You have to give that real estate agent commission. You have to go register it. I mean, it's registered under a bond. You have to deregister. You have to go to lawyers. That process eventually takes you a year just to release your $100,000. Whereas when you had, when you have shares in a company, you can release them without consulting a lawyer. You don't consult anyone. Your $100,000 is liquid. It comes into your bank account. You are done with your investment into the real estate investment trust.
Yeah, and sometimes you let me say your property is worth $1 million, but you are just in a cash crunch of, let me say, $250,000.
Yes.
So just basically that hustle, just to be able, you now have to sell your entire property because you can't partition it.
Yes.
But while on capital, you can always partition capital based on, say, you have maybe 3,000 shares and you can sell off 1,000 shares.
Yes.
You
know, and because you can partition. That is a perfect example of another situation that this can present itself.
Yeah. Now, when you look at the different media reports on investment experts, and when they talk about foreign direct investment, there's hardly anything basically on real estate capital that is coming in for real estate development. Now, when you look at the real estate investment trust, is this our foreign direct investment attractive vehicle into our space?
I believe so, because there's a saying in foreign direct investment that says money flows where it gets its best return. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Yeah.
So foreign direct investment already knows where there is incentives and legislation and so forth that is incentivizing them to invest in that country.
Mm-hmm.
Take South Africa as an example. South Africa has so many REITs. If you start doing research on REITs in South Africa, you probably will get to 100+ REITs.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing, many of them are doing quite well, right? But when you go into that country, what do you notice first? You land in Joburg, you see Sandton, you see buildings, you see high rise, you see neighborhoods, residential, commercial property. Like, it, you can really see that this country has taken a piece of paper and transformed their property industry, right?
Yeah,
and
I'm looking at one company here.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that they have 157 billion total property assets. In rands now.
Yes.
468 high quality physical property assets and 19 years record of uninterrupted dividend payments and 6.9 million square meters of space is now one of the real estate investment trusts.
Yes. So, and that's a good example of just so many companies in South Africa that have done that, right? But now foreign direct investment is excited to participate in South Africa's property market because they are at that level now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, where we want to get to as well, because foreign direct investment knows that this is a country that incentivizes our investments, because we are not going to get taxed, high tax on property if we invest in property industry there. And this is where as well, there are some legislation in Namibia that have worked well for us, because we are competitive compared to the world. For example, the mining industry, right?
Mm.
Maybe on the tech side, not so much, but our processes or our procedures are more favorable compared to many other countries. And that's why we have mines in Namibia right now, right?
Mm.
So you want to get into that gear or mindset of saying that we need to incentivize this industry because it's currently in crisis mode and it needs an incentive from government.
Mm. Okay. No, it's really like having this conversation. It's like it was supposed to happen like 10 years ago. Now, the general public now, currently there is an outcry of TPEC 2. Not TPEC, but mm-hmm. TPEC 2.
Yes.
Now, coming back to TPEC, I'm of the opinion that at the time when TPEC was launched in Namibia, it was a very good initiative.
Yes.
But I do not think that we had the right capacity to be able to roll out this project.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at our figures of producing 5,000, 6,000 houses a year, mm. And now suddenly you are having this 15 billion that you need to, where do you start? What do you need? You know, and perhaps the biggest mistake that I think came from TPEP, we were just simply not ready.
Yeah.
But now looking at back then, mm-hmm. and looking at what we have now in the country in terms of expect and knowledge.
Yes.
Now, you think that now, because of once this legislation comes to the forefront.
Yes.
Are we ready?
Let me give a governance comparison on how this can pan out differently compared to mass housing, right? So you are listing a company that you are saying is a real estate investment trust, right? You need to have a board that oversees, that is independent. That's the standard listing requirements. You need to have qualified people on the board and on the executive management level that executes that, right? You need to have a prospectus because you need to sell to someone to buy into your company, right? And by that, you are going to lay down a plan that I want to raise 1 billion because I'm going to invest in properties of this type because I think there's a return on investment of this type, right?
Then
there's a share price that moves with that, right? So that means if you don't deliver on that mandate, then you don't get people's trust and the company can fail. Remember, because it's people have to buy into it as an individual.
Okay.
Now we come back to TPEC as a mirroring example of what I just gave you now.
Mm.
You have a government who there's no necessarily board of TPEC. There wasn't any board, right? Mm. There wasn't any people that were vetted by whoever is supposed to vet to say that these are qualified people to execute this project, right?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a share price to say that the performance, can we really assess the performance of this project over time? Because the share price is what what is assessing if this project is successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just woke up one day and we are being told mass housing is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But we never seen it as a process. We need to see it as a process.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas as companies, when a company is doing something, they will inform their shareholders and say, we are currently now building a building for 100 million, it will have 300 houses. This is the return on investment that we expect.
Mm-hmm.
You will always get that report every year in the form of financial statements, integrated reports. You will get quarterly reports, some form of accountability mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of TPEC, what accountability mechanism was there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, so when I'm listening to you and what you are narrating, is you are then saying that when you look at Osona, you look at Omea, and you look at Ongos Valley Development.
Yes.
So those are typically these are typically high value projects that could then qualify
yes.
for real estate investment trust.
Yeah.
And maybe now that you comparing to the lessons,
yes.
the initiators of Ongos Valley Development, if such a vehicle was available, I think we could have seen a much greater impact into that space.
I agree.
Now, what are the processes? Let me say there's someone sitting with land
yes.
with maybe 200-300 hectares.
Yes.
And they would now want to get into this space, into the real estate investment trust space, what will the processes be for such a developer to unpack that project?
Yeah. There is no one way fits all, right? And you can name it different ways for such a person to play. But I see many. One could be that a gentleman owns a farm on the outskirts of Windhoek. Let's call it a listening, right?
Yeah.
And it's a fresh farm. And there's nothing built on it yet. And that farm, he wants to start a company himself and put it on the stock exchange and then go through the process of raising capital. Maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't know how to raise capital. He goes through the process of attracting investments, foreign, institutional, local, individuals, whatever form of raising capital they intend to do. So they can use that land that they already have to be the basis or the foundation of the company they can build. Or the vice versa can be that I can start a company because I know how to run that company. I know how to list and raise capital. Mm-hmm. Then I raise 1 billion Namibian dollars. Then I go out there and look for a farm. And then I stumble upon a gentleman who owns a farm called Elisenim. Mm-hmm. Same situation.
Mm-hmm.
But this time it's driven from the fact that there are people who understand markets and raising capital and governance and the likes that can raise capital, and then they go out and find property for them to invest in. Whereas at the same time, an individual who understands property and has land already in place, they can also go and raise capital in the market themselves and develop that concept note of whatever property development they want to do.
Okay. Now, when you look at our coming back to Wolfish Bay, the warehouse industry that you said we need to build an extensive warehouse industry in that space in terms of commercial real estate, the same thing that applies also now to Ludred. Now, In a business climate, they use terms of business rescue.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, in our situation, so you mean that our rescue now is this legislation, so that can unlock our problems?
I truly believe so.
Okay. Now, just to give a perspective to the listeners or the leadership that is listening to our show. Now, how do we now move forward in terms of to implement this policy? Now, I want you to look at it two perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Can private sector come forth? Or should, and say, here's a document, please have a look at it, a risk associated to everything? Or must we wait for government so that they go out on tender, then do a budgeting for someone to do and appoint consultants? Just in brief,
yes.
Just guide us.
And that in there lies what I perceive as the Namibian problem, that we want to see the problem as government's problem, they need to solve it, or we want to see government wants to see the problem as private sector problem, private sector has to solve it. But it benefits both of them, right? And in a situation where you are both benefiting, why don't you come together and shake hands? Because now you gave me two scenarios. You are saying private sector should come and hold their own conference, and then they come and draft a document, and then they come say, government, here's a document that we think is the best for you, right? It will not necessarily work like that.
Okay.
And the vice versa is, you will not see government needs to see a need for that to be created. I am of the opinion that need is now, it's urgent, and we need it as in yesterday.
Okay.
So
for government, they in private sector, they need to talk and say, let's come in a room and create a task force or a legislative output committee or something that really looks at what is your need as private sector, government, what is your objective as government, and let's create a legislation that marries both of them, right? We had land conference here, there, but what the output of this is not necessarily just conferencing or forum or what. It needs to be an output-based drafting that will lead to drafting, because the government does the drafting. But they need to see what is the real need and what is the output or the effect that is going to come out of there. I truly believe that private sector and public sector have to meet and shake hands.
Okay. So, not to cut you off, sorry. So then, you know, been listening the last half an hour that we've been engaging, and this sounds like such a simple, such an effective solution. What exactly is, what is the holdup? Why don't we have this already in place, in your opinion?
I think we haven't seen a strong drive towards this legislation. There are people who have made an effort to make this, to drive this through, but the drive is government seeing the need for it, because government is dealing with a lot of issues at hand. So the need versus an actual guideline of how to do it has not been there.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the rent control bill,
yes,
you know, it has been an eyesore.
Yes.
It's always been in the public domain. Now, when you look at the rent control bill, and then you look at the, based on your view, how you have now educated us on the real estate investment trust, do you think, which one must come first? Should we park the rent control bill and maybe give the real estate investment trust the benefit of the doubt that it will address this situation? Give us your perspective.
This is a very contentious issue, but I believe that the rent control bill is already passed.
No, not yet.
Really?
No, okay. Not yet.
I thought it's passed, but not yet implemented.
Even the draft is out.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyways, my opinion is just still the solution to the problem is supply and demand, not constraining, not necessarily controlling the market. It's not market manipulation. What I mean there is that for you to really address the situation at hand, the situation is now, it's an urgent, there's an urgent need for people to have housing, there's an urgent need for industrial and commercial developments, right? But the solution is really in supply and matching demand. The demand has so much outpaced supply, but for you to even out, you need a lot of supply. And I truly believe that the supply can only be coming if we have more capital, we have more incentives, we have more investors who want to participate in the industry. That's where my opinion stands.
So you are now saying, let's just park it, and then we're not saying we're gonna leave it. We park it for now, and so that we can first bring in enough capital to see that if
it's not even to me about capital, it's up. The focus should be on supply.
Okay.
Supply of land,
yeah.
Supply on developments, supply on the policy and the legislation will create supply. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Yes.
So meaning that now so we need to get to an equilibrium in the market,
yes,
for supply and demand.
Yes.
So that, and then we assess it from there.
Yes.
No. Just hold that thought. We like it that way. Okay, but now, when you look at now this whole new baby of the real estate investment trust, now you need to look at it from the Namibian horizon in terms of the economic support, the social support, the job creation. What is it going to unpack? Is it going to create new experts? What is it? What does it mean into when you look at it? And what is the domino effect in that whole spectrum?
I remember there was a time where construction industry was a very big player in employment in the country, right? Take a development. Let's take a mall. Developing a mall. The construction stage alone can create 600, 700 jobs, right? Mm-hmm. Then the mall stands. Then there are tenants that want to take up space in that mall. There will be shopkeepers that will be employed. There will be security. There will be the ripple effect of just, this is just a shopping complex that is creating employment, right? Then we translate into an industrial park, logistics industrial park. Let's take Walvis Bay is highly focused on fishing as an industry right now. But let's take logistics and we say we want to drive logistics as an industry to the greatest extent possible. And we may want to make Walvis Bay the import-export hub of Southern Africa. Then we want to build industrial parks. There will be truck drivers, there will be a lot of support services just for logistics alone, right? So the ripple effect of employment from that, right? And the economic boost of just an industrial park in Walvis Bay. Because right now, yes, we are doing export of copper in from Zambia to international waters through Walvis Bay. But those trucks come and line up in Walvis Bay. And eventually it will get to that point. But like, what if we create a real hub there and we create mini REITs, for example? This is just an ideology. It's not that I've done a thesis on it, but we create mini hubs of industrial parks where many different companies come and play. It's like a mini REITs in Walvis Bay, where they come, go and look for business in Zambia, Botswana, so that they create mini industrial parks just around that one district. In Dubai, they call it free economic zones, like that, where it's like a zone where export-import happens, right? What is the ripple effect of such a thing?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot even have control over just the ripple effect, but it starts with an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So equally so, in short, so you are saying that local authorities can equally participate in this real estate investment trust to basically to raise capital for instance, for their infrastructure investment to unlock development rights on certain land portion.
Yes.
And then obviously then once the people purchase, they will then use that money and then distribute into the economy.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, for the financial manager of any local authorities and for the CEO that are now currently struggling, and what is your message to them guided by the real estate investments trust? What is your message to them?
My message is not even just limited to them. It's guiding to say that the legislation is a benefit for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something to say that private sector is the biggest winner. Municipalities can be the biggest winner. Government can be the biggest winner. Because you as an individual can be the biggest winner. Because now suddenly you're going to get housing that was highly expensive, but it will actually find the real market value because there's a lot of players in the market. You are the biggest winner. So we need to put on the head to say we can all drive it because it benefits us all. It's not a municipality's benefiting only. Private sector can benefit. Your return on investment can benefit. So it's a national conversation.
Okay.
It's not a municipality only conversation. Yeah.
Now, as we are concluding, There's one particular support services which I think Namibians are still a bit behind, which is facility management, of which you will see that the big shopping centers, they usually bring in those big facility managers from South Africa,
yes,
and all that.
Yes.
Now, what do we need to do so that we also equally equipped? You see, when legislation come, you need to make sure that people are also equally ready for those opportunities once it's unlocked. So what is our fundamental preparation for what is about to come?
I work in a truly Namibian company that is capacitating itself and capacitating Namibians to be able to play into this industry. Young people who studied property studies, young people who studied anything around facility management. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that we take up and we have a drive to giving them skills, right? It's part of our own company policy. So when I see a Namibian company that is trying and to give people skills, I imagine, what if we had 10 of those companies? You see? What if we had more of those companies? Because the economics and the after will play out in itself as we go ahead, right? We cannot say, let's kill at 100%, then we do the legislation, because that will delay the legislation. But we need the legislation so that skills can be built into the industry. I there's a legislation that I like that was recently announced by or rolled out, which is the FEMA Act, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very, very, very good piece of legislation that we've done.
There's been a lot of a lot of people are saying the opposite about FEMA.
Yeah, there are aspects of it. Maybe we cannot get it 100% right, and you cannot really necessarily satisfy everyone. But it says, for example, you cannot outsource portfolio management services to other countries, mm-hmm. right? And for years, the portfolio management industry was being captured by South African companies. It's mm-hmm. just the truth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now, because of this legislation, each company is mandated to grow, skill, upskill Namibians, right? Because where are you gonna get those people if you cannot outsource it to a South African company?
No.
And if you, there are some companies in Namibia that they make 100 million revenue, and then 70 million is an expense that goes to South Africa.
Mm, mm, mm,
do you understand?
Mm.
Those are skills being exported just directly in your face on the financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine where now that this FEMA Act has made that you cannot do that anymore. You need to skill people in Namibia. Mm. Then over time, you'll see people change and the behavior and the skills will come into your country. Mm. So my thinking even with this is to say, even if we don't have the skills to par, the skills will come.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, fair enough. I mean, there is that drive for training. Now, equally so in this spectrum that we, as much as there's that drive, how do we alert academia for this equally so that there's a preparation? Because you must remember, facility management has a lot of components. So you need to understand electricity. You need to understand. It's like a building engineer per se. Now, you are out there. You are giving training. But are you communicating to the universities to say, guys, I think it's about time, because what we need to also think of, we need to think of what is about to come.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we do not want something to happen, and we now have to import mm-hmm. a lot of skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how will you then communicate this to the universities?
Yeah. I think the universities have a key part to play. And they will always continuously have a key part to play. I like the fact that they have property studies and the likes. And I think
the key thing is just for academia to keep up with the changing times. And the changing times are whether a new legislation comes into effect, they need to keep up with the changing times, or whether it's new policies or principles that are coming into the industry, they need to keep up with those changing times.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No, thank you so much. We really appreciate your visit here, and surely there's a part two coming. We need to unpack this thing more in depth and to make sure that people really understand what real estate investment trust means. And
yeah.
From our side in the studio, from Eagle FM, we are really, really blessed to have you. And today we're celebrating our first guest.
Yeah.
So it's quite a milestone, and we look to invite many more people that has of similar caliber in understanding of the investment space in to develop Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So we just say, want to thank you so much, and we really appreciate your foresight.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
100%. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another great edition of Ulwazi, and we will see you again on Monday afternoon.